You're listening to the Dead Tribe Paranormal Podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm John.
And today we are interviewing Tim Woolworth, founder of ITCvoices.org. And we're going to talk all about the ghost box and equipment and the evolution of it and all kinds of fun stuff. So how you doing today, Tim?
Doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. Excellent.
Awesome. So the ghost box. And ITC. So let's just start off. Can you tell everybody what ITC is and what the ghost box is?
Sure. ITC stands for Instrumental Transcommunication. It's a term that was coined by the eminent physicist Ernst Senkowski in the late 1980s. It's basically instrumental transcommunication is the use of instruments, instruments being electronic devices, to communicate with sentience of an unknown origin. ITC started in 1959 when the first EVPs were recorded by Friedrich Jurgensen and Anton von Zelay. EVP, most people don't know, is a form of ITC. ITC was relegated basically to EVP only until the 1980s, when a group in Belgium called CETL decided to develop devices to communicate with the other side and explore different ways to communicate with the other side. At the same time, groups in Germany, Luxembourg, and here in the US were all trying to accomplish the same thing. So in the 80s, ITC expanded out to the use of fax machines, video looping ITC, telephone call ITC, computer programs that were designed so it sent out a pulse and that pulse was manipulated every night and answers to questions would actually be written on the custom word processing software that they had designed for it. ITC has a long history. Photo ITC is used. Moving water image ITC is used. And all of this basically has come to a head with the ghost box, which is the first type of device that allows for two-way communication with the other side, even though it's problematic at best, because it's not like picking up a phone call and saying, "Hi, this is Tim. Who are you?" And someone on the other side says, "Hi, Tim. My name's Jim. How are you doing today?"
Right.
We don't get communication like that yet, but we will, hopefully soon.
Oh, nice. That sounded confident.
The ghost box was created by a man named Frank Sumption. The first ghost box was created in the spring of 2002 in an old cookie tin. How Frank arrived at the ghost box is a little bit of a short story. He was fascinated with EVP. He had been on different EVP boards, user groups from the early 90s right on through, and he'd been an avid reader of EVP books and articles throughout most of his life. He was not an electronics engineer by any means. He did own a ham radio station. He was a janitor by trade, though. He did have a little lot of electronics training from when he was in Vietnam. He picked up a magazine, Popular Electronics, October 1995. In that issue was an article written by a well-known paranormal author named Konstantinos. Mm-hmm. And he wrote an article on Konstantin Rodova, one of the foremost EVP pioneers. He brought EVP to the Western world with his book Breakthrough. So that particular article discussed Rodova, the Rodova diode, white noise generator, and how they work with EVP. So he picked up this magazine in 95. It was a Halloween edition. Read it, put it on a shelf. Pulled it off a shelf again in 2000. Read it, put it back on the shelf. Pulled it off again in 2001. Read it, and something clicked with him. He went to bed, and a fully formed circuit popped into his head. It took him months to develop, but that was the first ghost box. For the first several years of the ghost box, only a handful of people in the world had them. I'm one of those lucky people. I've had three of them. I have two of them currently. The ghost box, it's as crazy as it sounds, it's a broken radio. Basically, you take a radio, whether it be AM, FM, multiband, whatever you're looking at, and you apply random voltage to it. This random voltage controls the sweep going back and forth. And that sweep allows for a building of noise. You get all kinds of pops, mm-hmm. clicks, white noise. And through stochastic resonance, those on the other side are able to speak and their frequencies, whether it be thought forms, whether it be vibrations, whether it be vocal, we just simply don't know. It matches up with the white noise, and it carries to a louder volume, kind of like you can hear the beating of one bee's wings from a couple feet away. But you can hear a hive from dozens of feet away because you have all those wings beating at the same frequency.
Right.
That's stochastic resonance. They go and it becomes louder, and that's how they communicate from the other side. That's why white noise has been an integral part of EVP since it was first formed until we got to digital recorders in the late 90s. Because digital recorders have noisy IC chips in them, so you get enough noise for them to talk on the other side. So it is a broken radio. It applies random voltage, and through that voltage, you control the sweep, the rate, whether it goes fast or slow. Some boxes even allow you to choose forward or back, reverse modes, random modes, but these boxes are exceptionally rare. That's a ghost box in a nutshell. You ask a question, you get real-time communication.
Tim, when it first came out, you said the gentleman's name was Frank. I always heard it was called Frank's box. Is that any different from the ghost box, or is it basically the same thing?
The Frank's boxes are the boxes that were handmade by Frank Sumption.
Okay.
Those are the only boxes that can be labeled as a Frank's box.
Gotcha.
Most of the people out there who have created boxes since Frank have put their name on it, like Andre Wooler does the Andre's box. Andrew Openlander does the Andy's box. Greg Manchester, the Greg's box. Frank kind of started that whole naming process. Granted, there are a couple out there that aren't named after anyone, like the PSB-7, which most people in the paranormal are pretty well aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one that Gary Galka made, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right here in Connecticut.
Another one for Connecticut.
Yay!
So as people are developing these boxes, are they trying to do something different than Frank did and different than each other did, or...?
Well, Frank was unique in that every box that he made was different. He was looking for the perfect recipe. He would use different tuners, different schematics, different resistors, different sweeping mechanisms. Every box he made, he was looking towards perfection. Whereas most of the current builders today, what they'll do is they'll do one style of box, build a bunch of them, and then maybe do another style when they want to expand upon, when they think of something different. So of the people out there, there's not much new ingenuity when it comes to boxes. There are new boxes being put out all the time, but they pretty much stay the same as with the tuner and the sweeping mechanisms. They basically don't change these days.
Okay.
Frank was one of a kind when it came to that. The only other person who changed things up was Ron Ricketts, who did the mini box line.
Okay, what's different about his?
Well, the mini box was, and all subsequent boxes actually, all derived from Frank's schematics. Frank was a gem to the field. He put all of his schematics online for everyone to learn from. If anyone had a question, he would send them the answer on how he did something. And his schematics were picked up by a man named Joe Siopi, who made the Joe's Box, and Ron Ricketts, who did the mini box line. The mini box line is the only box line that has been developed by a true electronics engineer. He did it for years. That was his entire life's work. He retired. He belonged to a paranormal team down in Texas. They convinced him to take those schematics and try to do something with it, and he did. He developed the only perfect random sweep ever developed in ghost box technology. And with some of his boxes, like the Mini Box Pluses and the Mini Box Ultra Pluses, he put in excess of 15 sweep modes that could be used. And that is something that no one else has even been able to come close to. Unfortunately, Ron passed through the veil a few years ago, so we don't know where the technology would have went.
Oh, man. So what do you mean by different sweep modes, like different speeds or different, I don't even like
know. No, I mean, sweep mode is pretty simple. Take forward and reverse. Those are two discrete sweep modes. One goes forward, one goes back.
Okay.
He put in a lot of special numbers, like it would jump every 3 frequencies or every 7 frequencies, or it would do a random jump based on volume. So it would jump to the next station with the loudest volume or the most diminished volume, depending on your setting. And those are different modes. basically just different mechanisms to get up and down the radio band.
Oh, all right. Awesome.
Oh, do you, can you explain the difference now? I know that they just came out with another one, the SB. That's the one I used when I used to go out, the SB7, and now mm-hmm. they have the SB11.
Correct. I don't use the SB line because they are very painful to my ears. But the SB7 was pretty basic, forward and reverse sweep, so mm-hmm. two different mechanisms of sweep, AM, FM, and what I think four different variable sweep rates.
Mm-hmm.
The SB11, to my understanding, is basically it adds a little bit of detection to it, which isn't really necessary, and combines two different tuners. Okay. So you double your noise, double the reception.
Gotcha.
Okay. Well, interest in ghost box doesn't come out of nowhere. So how did you get interested in the beginning into paranormal at all?
Well, the paranormal has been with me my entire life. Like you guys, I grew up in an old part of the country, way up in central New York. And the house I grew up in was 150 years old.
Oh, wow.
Several family members had died in the place, and I grew up with haunted activity. Object translocation, knocks, steps, the full nine. Your typical haunted house.
Yeah.
And my mother is exceptionally devout as a Christian. And so to battle the evil forces in the world, she decided that it would be a wise thing in life to read up on all of the occult in case, you know, Satanists ever come knocking to the door.
Wow.
So I grew up with books with views on witchcraft, scrying, occultism, ghosts, paranormal. That was my reading material when I was 6, 7 years old. I was reading The Warrens at age 8.
Is that a good night moon?
It became a passion for me. And as an adult, I lived in several houses that had haunted activity. One place I was living in Hollywood, California, there was a knock on the door and then the handle would rattle on my bedroom door in the hallway every morning about 3:15. It happened so frequently, I actually gave the ghost a name. At that point, I wasn't into ghost hunting. But when I moved back to New York in 2003, I moved once again into a haunted place. And after a couple years, I had a sunroom in the front where I kept all of my bookcases. And the top shelf of the bookcase held a bunch of books that I had on writing. One of those books was by an author named Dorothea Brand from the 1920s. I write a lot, as you can see on ITC Voices. And I also do fiction and poetry, all kinds of crazy stuff. And writing is my passion. And I had put my passion to the wayside for a little while. So I'm out in the kitchen cooking, and all of a sudden I hear a thump. And I knew I could hear it because the house was big and echoey, and I knew where it was coming from. So I went to the sunroom, and this book from Dorothea Brand was laying in the middle of the floor.
Oh.
I thought it was a message from the other side. No problem, so I tucked it back on the shelf. A couple months later, the same book popped out on the floor.
Nuh-uh.
And at that point, I said, you know, something's going on here. I want to quantify what is going on. I have all of this knowledge, but I don't know how to put it to use to figure out what's going on. So I contacted a local ghost group. And the group was called Central New York Ghost Hunters. And it happened to be led by Miss Stacy Jones, the ghost cop. She's been a paranormal investigator for over 30 years and has been featured on several television shows and whatnot. She knew the ropes, and she taught me from day one how to be a proper investigator. And the first major investigation that I went on was a month later with the team. I was in an asylum in New York, and I saw my first ghost box in action.
Oh.
It was a Shack Hack 20-125, which is a little gray radio from Radio Shack. It's a Shack Hack. We'll discuss what those are in a little bit. And the box gets turned on. All I'm hearing is this noise and garble and noise and garble. I'm like, what the hell have I gotten myself into with these guys?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, all the garble stops, and I just hear Tim Woolworth. And then the garble picks up again.
What?
And I was floored from that moment on. The next day I went out, I bought one of the same radios, I hacked it, I took it home, and I heard nothing but garble. And eventually that garble started to turn into words, into phrases, and I was blessed that a real boutique ghost box, the Mini Box Plus, found its way into my hands a couple months later. And from that point on, I never looked back. I started ITC Voices a few months later, and It's now become the biggest resource for ghost box knowledge on the web.
Wow. Yeah, it's a really great website. I mean, there's, I was looking at it for a really long time. I mean, there's not a shortage of things to go through.
Yeah, it's got some depth to it. The Shack Hack, as I mentioned earlier, the Shack Hack was the first way that the common person could put a ghost box in their hands. As I mentioned, the Frank's box only belonged to a few people. And that is still pretty much the same. There's a couple of collectors who have over a dozen of his boxes, and there's a few people with a smattering of one or two. There's probably less than 40 people in the world that have a Frank's box right now. The PSB 7, which everyone is familiar with, came out in late October 2010. So before that, the only way anyone could get their hands on a ghost box, if they didn't want to plunk down $400 for a Joe's box or $800 for a mini box plus, was to build a Shack Hack. Unfortunately, those were the days before Facebook. Networking was done through basically going to people's sites and tracking people down. And there was a couple groups on Yahoo. Frank had one, another researcher had one, and another researcher had one. There were three Yahoo forums that were used, and they all still exist today, but no one uses them. Mm-hmm. So I looked at these forums, and this is how the Shack Hack actually came to existence, was through these forums. A man by the name of Bill Chappell, who you may be familiar with from yes. Ghost Adventures fame and Digital Dowsing.
Yeah.
He actually created the first user ghost box for people.
He's got something new. He's got something new every week, Tim.
It's seeming that way. This was back in the day when he was still very unknown, very experimental, before he became big time and started mass producing things. He was a fan of the ghost box way back when. And he said, you know something, I see Frank's schematics. I wonder if I can do this with an off-the-shelf radio without doing a whole bunch of modifications. So he figured out he can do a poor man's Frank's box.
Very nice. That's a ghost hunter's budget right there. Hobby, not a job.
You can still make these today. There's a radio on the market for $12.99. You can go modify and have a ghost box tomorrow. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. Basically, when you think of a radio, I like to liken it to when you're in a car and you're traveling from town to town. You are in a strange area, you don't know where you're going, and the radio station you've been listening to has dropped out. Mm-hmm. So what do? You
scan.
Hit scan, because you're not going to sit there and tune through every channel. Mm-hmm. And when you scan, it jumps from the loudest frequency to the loudest frequency to the loudest frequency. And in between these frequencies is all the static, all the junk, all the low frequencies that you will never, ever hear, because they're muted out. What Bill Chappell did is he said, you know something? I can take these radios from Radio Shack and cut the mute wire. And that's exactly how the Shack Hack was born. The mute wire was sliced. So not only did, when you hit scan, did it jump to every major radio station, but it also scanned every radio frequency that came through.
Huh.
So it's basically a ghost box with a fixed rate. It's a fixed rate sweep as opposed to a variable rate sweep. So it'll just be step. It'll be and you can't control that. But it works like a charm. It is a ghost box for the masses. And he published this in November of 2007. So for 3 years, those in the know were building ghost boxes, basically with off the shelf radios for $20. Unfortunately, as you know, Radio Shack has basically gone under at this point.
I know.
And getting Radio Shack radios is next to impossible. But there are a couple other manufacturers out there. They are called Shack Hacks because of the historical name. But you can get Sanjin, Koss, Kobe, Memorex. There's actually a full list on the site of ghost boxes that are hackable in case you're capable of coming across one of these things. And 99% of them, it's just taking the back off, maybe unscrewing a circuit board and looking for the mute wire and slicing it. It's that simple.
Huh. Is that what you did when you made your first one?
Exactly. That's the only thing I could get my hands on at the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know at one point when I had first gotten started, they were so hard to come by. I mean, they were on back order when you would go online and try to order one. It was so popular. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of criticism when it comes to the spirit box that I mean, you're either a believer or you're not a believer.
Well, everybody's a non-believer until they actually hear it say their name. And that's what it takes for every non-believer that I've ever met.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a lot of criticism on it because there are a lot of people out there who are new to the field and they're publishing obvious radio chatter as communication from the other side. And they say to the world, look, spirit radio, spirits, they're coming through. How many spirits are here? Oh, five. Yeah, well, they could have been on a radio station that was saying, call 1-800-555-1212, and that five came through at the time. So we look for what's called meaningful contact, where you address the other side, they address you back. You ask a question, you get a response. These responses don't always come in the same voice. There's several different ways the frequencies can be manipulated from the other side, but we look for meaningful communication, not just the occasional hello.
Yeah, I would. I know some of the first ones I used to get were actual swear words, and I know you don't hear those on radio.
Swear words, I love them and I hate them. Yeah. I've trained my contact field on the other side not to swear. If I'm in a new location and I've got new spirits in my contact field, sometimes they'll want to come through, especially if I'm with a woman or two, because I'm sorry, but women are picked on by the other side.
You are not kidding when you say that. I don't know how many times we've gone out and said the same thing. Every time you go out and you hear those nasty words that women don't want to hear, guys call them.
Exactly. And you're dealing with low-level vibrations at that point. And you have to realize you have no control over what comes through the device, but you have control of whether the device is on or off. And once you start enforcing the fact that you don't want to hear swear words or you'll turn the box off, they learn. Mm-hmm. It's your contact field. You're telling a contact field what you want. We also have techs who will help you enforce these things. So if you hear the C word or the B word, you say, you know, I don't want to hear that. I hear it one more time. The radio's going off. I'm going to hang up. The connection's done. They'll learn. Once you turn it off a couple times, it won't be an issue.
Oh, they can't hear me anymore.
The woman will be fine. We can give it as good as we get. Hey, we'll be all right.
I had to ask this. The obelisk that has come out in the spirit box, what's the difference? I know there's a dictionary, they say, in the obelisk.
Yes, there is a huge difference between the two.
Okay.
The spirit box, ghost box, it's live radio. It's what you're hearing. Mm-hmm. The obelisk is completely different. It is a box that takes variable measures of the environment. If I'm not mistaken, I know it's EMF. I think it's temperature, and maybe barometric and a couple of other basic environment detection algorithms. And when it detects a variance in one of these algorithms, it translates that to a bank in the software profile. So it can either be a word or it can be a phoneme or a morpheme, however he loads them up. Mm-hmm. So as it's switching through, it's detecting environmental changes and producing a word as a result. I've been on cases where, like, I can be for example, a marine museum, and I get stuff like sea, captain, water. It's spot on. Or I can be at a marine museum, and I'll get words like cupcake, banshee. Exactly.
It just means that the rain is getting closer.
I know everybody out there can only hear us, but if you saw the puzzled look on our face, so your feelings on the obelisk are, it works.
The obelisk? Sometimes it's on, sometimes it's off. Way off.
Yeah.
But you know, wherever there's a way spirit can communicate, they typically find a way to do it. Mm-hmm. They manipulate our recorders. For example, it's been well known for several years that you can actually detach the microphone from a digital recorder and their voice can still imprint upon it. So we don't know how they are manipulating our devices, but apparently they can. Whatever we put out, whether it's vibrational, whether it's a physical force that's exerted, we simply do not know. We just know that ITC works and the obelisk is an ITC device.
Wow, I hadn't heard that about the microphone. I didn't even think to think that. That's really cool. When the microphone is removed, does it come through clear if one speaks?
I honestly don't remember. The It's published on ATRANC, AssociationTransCommunication.org. And I have not been there in forever, ATRANC.org. They are the inherited version of the American Association of EVP that was founded by Sarah Estep in 1980 or 1981. She ran the AAVP right up until the late 90s when the Butlers took it over and turned it into ATRANC. And they have if you ever want to learn anything about the studies of EVP and what's been published, what's out there, that's the place to go.
Okay, good resource. Can we go back to, you were talking about having a contact field. Now, I know of a lot of people that use Ghostbox. You're one of the first people that I've heard say that you actually have your own personal spirits that help you out with this and that you stay in contact
with. It's not just spirits that help us out. A contact field is something that every one of us who investigates have. And even people who don't investigate, they have contact fields.
Oh, okay.
A contact field happens when you are on an investigation. You meet certain entities from the other side. They find you interesting. They know your vibration. They know when you are going to communicate with the other side. They're there. They can detect it. The same thing happens with a ghost box. You turn it on, you meet new contacts. They're there next time you turn it on. I have a little boy named David who has followed me from New York. He's always around. My tech, Tom, I've heard him in three different countries doing ghost box sessions. I'll talk about techs in a little bit. But basically, when you are on an investigation or you are using a device to communicate with the other side, you're making yourself known on the other side. And every place that you go, you're introducing yourself to new people. The ghosts, spirits, entities, whatever you want to call them, they don't stop at the walls. They're not haunting a house. They're just in the ethereal proximity of where a house is. When you're investigating a haunting, if you're an active investigator, chances are you've brought one or two of those spirits with you. That happens all the time.
John's raising his hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's called a contact field. Not many people use that term. I can't remember where I picked it up from. It might have been one of Sienkowski's works, but contact field is what I've been referring to it as. And yeah, it's they're always there with you. And even people who don't investigate, you always have friends who are gone, family who are gone, mothers, daughters, brothers, sisters. They're always around you, and they're always never around you. You can't tell. They're in the ethereal, but they are there. Your family's always looking out for you.
Have you heard anything or anybody you recognize when you turned on your box? Sorry, Tim.
Well, yeah, I mean, people that I've known in life who've passed over on the other side, absolutely. I've only ever reached out to one family member, and I waited for a week after her funeral, and she came through and just said, "Hi, TJ," my nickname, in her voice. It was clear as day, and that's all I ever needed, and I never reached out to her again. I knew she was okay. Frank Sumption has come through quite frequently. I never ask for him, but he's always there almost every session. The best part about this and the thing that boggles the mind most is I've recorded on three separate occasions the voices of people who are alive and well coming through a ghost box.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah, is it like a recording or is it actually live?
Live through the ghost box.
Wow. Try to explain that one, Tim.
I've tried.
Wow.
But let me give you a breakdown of it. It's on the site. It's an article entitled Projection of Consciousness, I believe, where I have the three examples that I recorded, and they are all crystal clear. The last one I actually put in a spectrogram, and you can see that the frequencies match up exactly with what comes through the box. It's fantastic.
Wow.
The first time I ever recorded it, well, I recorded, I think, all three of them in 2010. The first time I was doing a ghost box session at home, it was like 3 or 4 in the morning, and a voice came through. I didn't recognize it in real time, but I listened to it the next day, and it said, "Timmy," and then "Karina." And I recognized the voice immediately. The one that said, "Timmy," was the voice of my ex-roommate when I lived in California. I hadn't spoken to him in over a year. We kind of lost contact. I was on the East Coast. He was on the West Coast. Friends drift apart. It happens.
Do you think that he was talking about you at that exact moment? Is that how you heard it?
No, because I called him the next day. Luckily, his phone number was still the same phone number.
Yeah.
He was an audio engineer at the time. That's how we met. We were both audio engineers. And I explained to him briefly what a ghost box is and how it works. He instantly grasped it. And then I emailed him the clip. He played it and called me back, freaked the hell out. And basically, the Timmy is his voice. And afterwards, the word Karina. Karina is his life partner that he had met a month prior.
Wow.
He was asleep at the time that this message came through. I don't know if he was reaching out through his astral self or not, but they're on the site. You can compare them
Say the site again.
It's itcvoices.org.
Okay.
And the search bar in the top, you can just type up the word projection, and the projection of consciousness article will pop right up.
Wow.
And he was asleep at the time, so I had him record his voice afterwards as a comparison. The same thing happened with another friend of mine who lived in the same general area. She lived 45 miles north of me. She was on my ghost team at the time. And once again, it was 3 or 4 in the morning. She was asleep, but at the time she was trying to practice lucid dreaming. I didn't hear her voice once again in real time, but I heard it when I played back and reviewed the session. It just simply says, "Hi, Tim," in her voice, clear as day, and she was asleep at the time. The third instance is the trippiest of them all. My ghost team was on an investigation. We were at an old mortuary, a fantastic location, where the caretaker or whatever, the owner of the mortuary, died. And the place was in escrow for several months, including over the summer months. And during this time, there were 11 or 12 bodies that were stuck there, and they couldn't be moved because the place was in escrow.
Oh, gross.
So, yeah, it was exceptionally gross, but it was a fantastic location.
Oh, my gosh.
And we're sitting down at a table doing an investigation. We had a shack hack out and just playing through. And at that time, this was early 2010, no one was recording shack hack sessions because they figured, whatever, it's real time. There's no real evidence here. But I was recording all the sessions and parsing them. And then I found a piece and I sent it to Stacy Jones. And I said, "You've got to hear this." Because in that 10, 15 second clip, she comes through the ghost box. And a couple seconds later, she and the real Stacy next to me comments on what she thought she heard. So we have her voice coming through the ghost box and then her voice directly after it for a direct comparison.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
What
and
did
those
it?
Are the only three. Oh, in a way, it turns me off is what she says.
Okay.
No idea what it means, but she says, in a way, it pisses me off. I don't know. We disagree on that, but whatever. And to my knowledge, those are the only three clips of living people that have ever been recorded and recognized as living people. I'm not saying other people haven't recorded them. I'm just saying that there's never been direct recognition or recordings to compare the two voices.
I have a question. I'm sure Kelly has one too. I've always heard turning on a recorder or a ghost box, even in your house, it invites things to come talk to you that you possibly don't want. Truth to that?
Well, anytime you turn on a device, you don't know what you're inviting in.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
For serious ITC researchers, it's always been done at home. Ever since the first days of EVP, it's been done at home.
Yeah.
It's no different than doing a session in the field. Unfortunately, you can invite things into your house. And if you persist in this type of field, you will inevitably wind up with a haunting of some sort. And this happens at every place that I move into now.
I'm with you there, Tim.
It's just a given. I accept it. You know, a footstep or two, things getting knocked off a shelf, it doesn't really bother me. The missus, on the other hand, it's a little weird for her sometimes.
She's still the missus?
I mean, with you, it was happening all the time anyway, though. So.
Yeah. She knew what she was getting into.
Yeah, so yeah, you'd have no control over the other side. And as ghost hunters, investigators, if you show an expressed interest in the other side, you are inviting that as well.
Okay. All right. So what do you think about turning on the box now to see if you get your little friend that is around to come through?
Oh, we can definitely turn a box on.
Yeah, just get a little sample for everybody.
Sure. I'll turn on the Mini Box Plus, which has been by my side for, since 2010. And we'll see what comes through. This has been my most reliable box to date. Hello? Hello?
Oh, my God.
Purple. Purple, that's Frank Sumption, by the way. That was his nickname.
Oh.
We're listening, guys.
Right now.
Hi, Tim.
Wow.
Dave.
Hi. Sir.
Sir.
What's this there? Hi, Tom. This is going to be one of those short sessions, guys.
Right now.
Okay. Please say what you have to say.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
Do you hear them say hi back to you?
I keep hearing a female's voice.
Mm-hmm. What's the name of the woman? Is that you, Lisa? Calling you. What's your name? Help. Help? Okay. Thomas. All right.
Oh, I heard that.
How many people need help?
Did you say many?
Have to keep it.
Yeah. Can they line up, please? Yes. Tell me when you're ready.
There are more?
Okay. Get them, please. Now?
Easy to work with.
I know it's easy to work with.
They're not easy to work with.
All right, so we're going to set this up. Tom, are you there, bud?
Yeah.
They're good now? Okay, never mind. You got them? They're good? Thank you.
No.
That was good. Is there anyone left? I didn't catch that, I'm sorry. I'm not catching it, guys. Not in real time, anyway. But I'm gonna say goodbye. I know you've been hacked. We're gonna say goodbye, is that okay? All right, goodbye in 3, 2, 1. Goodbye.
Thanks.
Thank you. Tim, that was amazing.
Yeah, basically what you just heard in real time was a crossover session, guys. Done like that.
Wow. That was amazing.
As a little explanation, I've been doing crossover sessions since 2010, March of 2010. When I recorded and published the first real-time two-way crossing over session ever in the world. It happened to me in Gettysburg. It was early March. It was a windy day. Have either of you guys been to Gettysburg?
No, we were actually trying to go this month, yeah. But we couldn't work it out. So it's on our to-do list. We want to do podcasts from down there.
Okay. Well, at the top of Little Round Top, which was a battlefield, there is a castle monument. It's for a New York infantry squad, two New York infantry squads, actually. And it looks like a little castle. It's one of the biggest tourist attractions there. The inside of the castle is marble, a nice echoey chamber. So I sat in there and I did a session, and I was very, very lucky because typically busloads of people are going through there at all times. I don't know if it was the day, I don't know if it was the weather, the time of year, but there were no busloads. Instead, there were two young children who walked through, and that was it. And they just passed right through. And the rest of the session, it was a 7-minute session in total, and it was the clearest session to date that I've recorded. There was no radio interference. It was two-way communication. It was so clear that I could hear my tech reiterating my words on the other side. And all this is recorded and on the web. And it was a real two-way communication session where I had two spirits asking for help, that they'd been there a long time.
You've probably been here a long time, right?
I asked about the lights were everywhere, all of this stuff. And I asked them to find the guides that surround me and bring them through, and all of a sudden they left. And then I realized they left. They were on the other side. But one of those voices came back and said, "Thank you." This was about 10 times louder, like she'd been recharged as soon as went into the light. It was fantastic. And ever since then, what you heard tonight has been happening. They're called crossover sessions, and I recognize them because you'll get the word help quite frequently. And ghost boxers have been getting the word help forever, and none of them basically know what to do. So I've published these articles on how to do crossing over sessions with audio to back it up and show people how it's done. And they ask for help. What you do is you say, okay, I know you need help. How many people are there? Line them up, please get them all together. And you heard them say, not yet, they're coming, whatever it was earlier tonight. There's many more, whatever. And then they lined up, and then it said, they've got them, they're across, they're in the light. It's that simple. We all have techs on the other side. We have no power to cross over these earthbound spirits whatsoever. We can suggest, that's all we can do. When we turn these boxes on, they know they can communicate two ways, real time, with us. I liken it to being a flashing light on the other side. Your contact field says, hey, this guy's here. You recognize his vibration. He talks to the other side. And they surround me. If you're ever at a location with me, you can actually feel the cold spot. I get enveloped during these sessions. And they come and they start asking for help. I have them all gathered up, and then I ask one of my techs on the other side to take care of them, lead them across. And it's that simple.
Do you think that's how it's happening then when psychics and mediums do it too? You think it's their spirit guides contacting?
Yeah, sometimes. Other mediums such as Marianne Winkowski or James Van Praagh or John Edwards, a lot of them, if you read the books that they write, they actually speak about creating a white light on the wall. But part of it is creating the light, and the second part is actually getting them to go into it. So you have to have some way to communicate with the other side and be able to listen back to what they are saying. We are always communicating with the other side because our thoughts broadcast. They pick up our thoughts. There are many times I can turn on a box, ask a question, and it was already answered before I even asked the question. you've probably found that with EVP too, if you've done a lot of investigations. That happens. They can read us way better than we can read them.
So the session you just did a couple minutes ago, that was sweeping all different radio stations. We heard some music in there. Were any of those voices that we heard, did you think any of them were just the regular radio? I mean, some sounded a little just like commercial-like, or no?
Not from what I heard, but once again, you have to go... What you hear in real time is about 30% when you're really experienced, and that's on a good day. So most of what we hear, we parse out on replay. And there's several different ways that communication ensues. There's fragmentative communication where a phrase or a sentence will happen over several unique utterances. And sometimes in between those utterances, you can have a little bit of radio. So you can get one word and then another word and another word and another word. Spanned out over 10 seconds, but it'll be a full phrase communication. That's called fragmentative. Then there's breakthrough communication, which is what we all aspire to. I classified all these and named these a couple years ago. And breakthrough, I named after Konstantin Radova because of his book Breakthrough, which brought EVP to the Western world. Breakthrough communication is, you heard a bit of that tonight, where there's no radio interference. It's pure communication, like it's easy to use. They were talking about the box tonight. That was a pure breakthrough communication that you guys heard. And the little voices that say like, hi, Tim, stuff like that, or hi, that one that was really loud. That's a breakthrough communication. And there's other types of communication that you only pick up on review. There are sing-song voices where they actually sing to you. There are electronic voices where the voices sound like nothing human that has ever existed. They are of a pure electronic nature, like it's a handful of frequencies meshed together to make words. And we also have physical manipulation of the radio. It can glissando from one song into a next to create a phrase meaningful to you. And that's rare, but it does happen. These are all different forms of communication we get through the box.
Wow. Now, how would you be able to tell how close they were, how clear they are? Or is that...
How do you mean close?
Like, how do you know where they were or how close they are when they're communicating with you? Is it more clear the closer they are? Are they in your house? Are they lining up in your house? Or... You know,
like I said, I can tell that they get closer because I get enveloped in a cold field. But for all I know, you know, they'd be kicking it on a beach in Maui. I honestly don't think it's a matter of proximity. I think in the astral realms, there are several interpenetrating spheres of influence. Depending upon vibration, that tells you what sphere that they are in. So we are in several different spheres of influence right now, but we can only recognize one because that's what our vibration is set up for. Mm-hmm. On the other side, they may be able to recognize several different forms of vibration.
Well, the only reason I ask is because some of the shows on TV, when they have the spirit box out, they're asking questions and they get answers. So obviously they're thinking they're right there with them. So that's why I was asking.
Oh, yeah, you can't. I know that they're right there with you at times.
Yeah.
When I first started out, I began by doing, you know, the simple, stupid experiments that everyone does. How many fingers am I holding up?
What's
the color of my shirt? And I stopped doing all of that when I realized I was treating them like circus performers at that point, and they were performing for my amusement.
Yeah.
It's the misuse of a miracle. You're talking with the other side. You're talking with a sentience of unknown origin. And the best thing you can do is say, how many fingers am I holding up?
What are the lotto numbers?
Andrew Openlander from Chicago Spirit Wave, who makes the Andy's boxes, he had something called Ghost Lotto. Just as a joke, where you ask the other side lotto numbers every night. And... the one time he didn't film it, they actually did the proper numbers and he didn't play.
Get out.
He's still kicking himself in the ass for that.
Oh, my God.
We're going to need proof.
Wow.
But, yeah,
they probably gave it up because they knew he wasn't recording it. He's like, all right, you want to play? I'll give you the numbers so I know you cannot prove it.
Well, if you follow any of the theorem that's been written by people before me and mediums and everything else, you're only as intelligent on the other side as you were on this side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have access to more information that's going around, but you can't see the future. That's why mediums can't predict the future. It just doesn't happen. No medium has ever won the lottery, and it probably never will. So, I forget how we jumped off on this tangent. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah,
we babble.
I mean, I know you don't want to like treat them like monkeys or circus animals, but I mean, did you used to do anything or do you still do anything just to kind of validate it? I mean, it's more about trying to get validation than just respect them.
When I first started out, it was about validation. But after hundreds of hours of recording, dozens of investigations where I get these real-time communications from the other side, I don't need to know that. I don't need to have validation that the box is working anymore. I know it works because my name's going to be said. I know it works because questions are going to be answered or people are going to be asking for help. Those who are new to the field, they still grapple with the fact that
does this
voices
really work?
Are coming. Yeah. I'm getting communication from a broken radio. What the hell is going on? I can't believe this works. But I stopped doing these types of sessions after I did something called the pen test, which I do believe is on the site. If not, it's on SoundCloud. I was doing a simple session where I had a Sharpie pen. And I said, can you see the pen in my hand? And I asked a couple times. All of a sudden, a voice comes through. It's a sharp pen, just like that. They didn't say Sharpie. Wow. They said sharp. And then I said, what color is it? Black. Pure as day through the box. And that was all the validation I ever needed, and I never did another test like that again.
Oh, okay. That sounds fair enough to me.
I found, Tim, when I used the spirit box before, that you would get a female's voice, but then it would disappear, almost like they would push her to the back row where she couldn't talk to you, and it was all the males kind of forcing themselves up to talk.
That's quite common. For some reason, males are a more dominant personality in the other life, just like they are in this life.
Yeah.
No offense.
Women are often...
offense taken.
I said dominant personality. Yeah.
This interview's
dominant
over.
Dominant personality, and that's all.
Nobody puts Kelly in the dominant. Back of the room.
But yeah, I find that the women often get cast aside, and children, I've had sessions where children are told to be quiet.
Yeah.
They don't like children speaking. It's something that's very common.
Wow.
I don't understand the explanation behind it. I'm not even going to fathom a guess at this point, but it's something I've observed over time.
Mm-hmm. I know that there was this one time a dad didn't like his kid telling me something was wrong with the car they were trying to sell me, but that made sense. So when you go back and listen to your sessions that you've done, have you ever timed any of the audio? Like, I did a session with somebody once, and I think it was just a continuous sweep because a lot of the repeat things, you know, similar voices were coming through every, you know, 5-10 seconds, whatever it was. But also it was hitting on a Spanish music station, and it was coming through at the same rate, you know? So like, I knew that wasn't ghostly.
Yeah.
And a lot of the voices they heard, they're like, did you hear that? Did you hear that? And I'm saying, well, yeah, but it's like every 10 seconds. So.
Mm-hmm. And you'll find that with standard sweep boxes like the PSP or the Shack Hacks, because it does go through the frequencies, and you're going to recognize the same things that happen, especially if you're on, like, using an AM, for example. On any night past 10 o'clock, you get clear channel broadcasting, in which one frequency will cover several AM frequencies at night to go farther. There's less commercials, there's less broadcast noise, so they are allowed to take up more than their standard frequency allotment. And if you use AM on a standard Shack Hack or PSB, you're going to get frequencies that expand. So if you get a 3-5 word communication in a row, chances are it's clear channel and it's not real communication coming through. The boxes I use are boutique boxes. They have a variable sweep rate, so I'm always adjusting the sweep rate, so it's never going at the same rate.
Okay.
The box that you just heard was in a mode that was a random jump, so it's just jumping around the frequency, so it does not go in any linear fashion whatsoever between the frequencies, so that makes it next to impossible to time because of the methodology that I use.
Okay.
Very nice.
From all your sessions, do you have, do you have like a favorite thing you've ever caught, and then a least favorite thing or something that really scared you?
The most favorite thing that I've ever caught, it has a swear word. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're rated R, Tim, so go ahead.
Okay.
We're not on clear channel, so.
Yeah. I don't mean to offend anybody when I say this, but I was doing a session in Central New York, and it has a large community of Black people. And I turned the box, I gave them my countdown like I always do with the box, and I said, I'm going to hang up in 3. And then all of a sudden, this voice comes through in a rap, and you can tell it's a Black person's voice. It says, don't go, Timmy. Yo, my nigga, no. And that was, they were telling me to stay. And that's probably my favorite clip of all time, outside of the crossing over session that I did, because it's the only clip where it's a physical rap where they were singing to me. I've had sing-song things like, I love you, stuff like that. Never just straight vocals. And that really still cracks me up.
That's awesome.
And obviously the ones where living people are coming through the box, that's just something that's inexplicable. And I think a solution for that and the proper explanation for that will probably come after I die, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone can even touch that at this point in time. As for stuff that scared me through a box, I've never had anything that scares me through a box because I know it's just communication. I have had something that... scared me a little through a box, I guess you could say. The box, the communication itself didn't scare me, but the result did. I was in the most haunted location I've ever been in. And I don't say that lightly, because I've been to some fantastic places over the years that always produce evidence and have some very checkered histories. This place belonged to a steel magnate who died on the Titanic. The house was left to his family, and it fell into disrepair. It was a mansion on several acres of land. And the mansion had a caretaker's house down the road, halfway up the property line. The house was then given to a church group, and a bunch of cabins were put on the property, and it became a place where kids went during the summertime. And there are rumors of illicit things that happened to the poor kids there. When I went down to the caretaker's house, my group was a large group of individuals. We had like a 20-person team. We had several locations to investigate that night, so we broke up into teams of four or five, whatever. And the prior teams that had been there, down in the caretaker's house, they'd all reported that place is so loaded with activity. You have to go there. You have to go there. And every one of the teams had said, wait until the end of the night. Tim is going to come down. He's got something where he's going to be able to talk to you, and we'll be able to hear what you have to say. So they were preloading for me to come into that building, unfortunately. And when I got into the caretaker's house, I had a mag light in my hand. Standard on, no flashlight technique, none of that stuff. It just starts flashing like crazy in my hand. And then all of a sudden it went all the way on, all the way off, and stayed off when I had it turned on. I had to physically take out the battery and put it back on to get the flashlight working again. I was instantly enveloped in cold. They measured it. So they knew I was there to communicate with them. When we sat down, there were five of us in the building. We heard in the back like a constant murmur of conversation. You couldn't make out a single word, but you could make out three, four voices just conversing. It was so loud that we sent an investigator out twice to circle the caretaker's house. And mind you, this is on several acres of property. Behind him is the woods. The road is probably 2 acres down from this house. And the mansion is a couple acres up the hill. There's no one around, no one in proximity. But we're hearing conversation level murmurs. And so we knew something was going on with that place.
Yeah.
There was an EVP. There was an EVP that was recorded. I didn't record it. Stacy did. Her dog, her beloved dog, had passed to the other side. And the EVP said clearly, we've got your fucking dog.
Oh, my God.
Just like that. That's how nasty this place was.
No.
So we start doing our EVP sessions, blah, blah, blah. And I get to the point of turning on the box. Once I turn on the box, I get nothing but, help me, I've been shot. They're coming after me. All of this really bad feeling stuff. And then I got the word soldiers, Cherry Hill, they're coming. It was the Cherry Hill Massacre that it happened less than 5 miles away when the Mohawks slaughtered some Americans on behalf of the British during the Revolutionary War.
Oh, my.
And they were physically still coming through from the Revolutionary War seeking help. And just when it got to the point where I was ready to help them to cross over, Stacy burst through the doors like, it's midnight, time to pack up, let's go.
Oh,
so no. I wasn't capable of finishing my session, and I made a critical error. I said, you know something, guys, I'm going to turn the box on tomorrow and I'm going to help you once I get back to my house. That was a big mistake. Mm. That was a huge mistake. As I walked up the hill, the flashlight started doing its thing again. I just put it in my pocket and I used other people's flashlights, and I was enveloped in a cold like I'd never felt before. When I got to the top of the hill, the temperature outside, it was a balmy August night, about 78 degrees. The temperature around me within a 2 feet radius was 8 degrees cooler.
Wow.
It was physically measurable on our devices.
Yeah, that's significant.
So people were trying crystal work, they were trying Reiki work, all of this stuff, and I knew I had an attachment at that point. I just knew it to my very core. I drove home that night trying everything, like driving with the windows open, begging it to go, all this stuff on the way home, ridiculous things, just grasping at straws. So I got home, and I was just overcome with pure exhaustion. For the next 2 nights and 3 days, my life was hell. I couldn't stay awake for more than a couple minutes at a time. I slept for over 21 hours a day. I had no energy. I could do absolutely nothing. I didn't even want to turn the box on to try to help them. I fell asleep eating, for Christ's sakes, in my chair. That's how exhausting it was. I had to call into work. I couldn't do anything for a few days. And the third day, I passed out again, and I wake up in the middle of my floor. It's one of the African masks that I had been collecting. And it was lying in the middle of the floor, 10 feet off the wall facing me. And I was fine from that point on. That was their signal saying, hey, screw you, we've left.
Wow.
And guess what? Tim keeps doing what he's doing.
But I learned a little something because...
don't invite. I'll talk to you when I get home, guys.
Yeah, don't ever do that. But I did learn a little bit. One of the members of our team who wasn't a very active member of the team, but he was a shaman. He had been struck by lightning. And after he was struck by lightning, he was able to see things and hear things exceptionally clear. And I did a session with him, not a ghost box session, but a one-on-one where we talked about what happened. And he introduced me to light protection. And because he asked me what my religious beliefs were, and I told him I have none, he said, well, what do you believe in? And I said, well, we're all part of the source. Everything is one. We picture everything differently because of magnetic forces, but we're all part of the same living entity. And that's basically what it is when you look at an atomic structure. He said, that's absolutely correct. And each one of these things has their own energy, their own light. And if you draw this light into you for protection, you can keep things at bay that would normally want to get in. And if you've ever been on an investigation, you may have experienced something that wanted to get in. A lot of people get a huge pressure in the chest or overcome with emotions. That's when communicants on the other side are full of empathy and they're trying to, they're full of emotion and they're trying to talk to you empathetically. So you feel what they are trying to communicate. Or if you're a medium, you might be able to hear what they say or see them physically. But if you protect yourself and whatever means works for you, some people swear by the Archangel Michael or Raphael, or other people swear by the goddess or the god, whatever fills you with a sense of protection, that's something that you need to work with. I still get overcome at times, especially when I'm at public events. I will sit down and turn on a box with a room of 30, sometimes 40, sometimes 50 people when we do public events here in Michigan. And at these times, it becomes something spectacular because loved ones from the people who are in the crowd on the other side, they come through. And there's nothing more special than seeing a woman recognizing the voice of her lost son and asking if it's him. And I relay the questions to the other side, and they actually answer back and say, we love you, Mom. And you just see tears rolling down her face.
Oh, my God.
And that kind of stuff happens all the time. And usually when there's that much emotion in the room and that much emotion on the other side, that son, for instance, this happens almost every session with multiple people. That son was part of her contact field. Like I said, family's always around on the other side. So if you've lost family member, even family members you've never met, great grandmothers, grandfathers, they look on their lineage. They look on their vibration line. You always have family around. But when all that emotion tries to come through, it comes through me in a way. You guys watched it. I don't know if they can see the video or not on the podcast, but you would have noticed my right hand was constantly moving on that knob. That right hand, I let them control. I've practiced automatic writing since the age of 12 or 13, and it's the same hand I let them control. They control the bandwidth of the frequencies that's coming through. I just let them do it. And basically, I become an electronic medium at that point in time. And when all that emotion on the other side gets channeled through, sometimes it gets so overwhelming when I'm done, I can barely walk, I can't talk, anything like that, and I need to reground myself. And that happens infrequently, but it does still happen, but nothing negative or attachment-like has ever happened since that one investigation.
That's good, at least. Cool. So that's something you and your group do a lot, public appearances and ghost hunts as well?
Well, the group I'm with now is a fantastic group called the Motor City Ghost Hunters. Coming from a background with a team in New York that was very community service oriented, I sought out a team that was dedicated to the community as well. So what we do is we partner with various historical societies here in southeastern Michigan. We set up meetings, talk to their board. We go in and we say, you know something, we'd love to investigate the place. And with a little cajoling, we can get into an investigation. Typically, you're dealing with historical societies with a bunch of, don't know how many you've dealt with, but they're usually elderly folks. And they're not easily swayed to let you go into their property. But when it does happen, and now that we have such a fabulous relationship with almost, I believe, 10 of them now here in Michigan, so our reputation precedes us. We go in, we do an investigation, we give a presentation afterwards. Sometimes they want it public, sometimes they want it private, of the evidence that we located at the place. And we also have a certified genealogist on the group and two hardcore dedicated researchers. So they dig up every little factoid. One of the historical societies we work with, they filled in more information than what was readily available about the lighthouse keepers that were at this location. So once we figure out whether there's something there or not, we talk to them about public events. Public events are where the historical society sells every ticket and they determine the amount of the price of the ticket and the amount of people who are there. We have them ranging from 20 people right on up to 40, 45 people in an investigation that has multiple locations. And they sell the tickets, they collect the money. All the proceeds go to them. It becomes a huge fundraiser. You get 40 people paying 40 bucks a pop, plus hitting the gift shop and buying sodas and waters and everything else. It's a big boon to these small historical societies pulling in $2,000 for an event.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, we do all of the advertisement through our site, and they do a little advertisement at whatever location they have. And these things are sold out months in advance. One of the events we have next weekend has a 90-person waiting list.
Oh, my gosh.
It's that serious. And it's wonderful because we lead the walks. We put out all of our equipment so the public can use the equipment. They actually conduct ghost hunts. We're in each location, each building, whatever it is. Because most of these historical societies have 3 to 5 locations that you can investigate. They're little villages, basically. So you can break it up over multiple things. It becomes a 5-hour event over the course of time. And at the end of the night, that's when everybody gets together and I do a grand ghost box session for everybody so they can see what the whole thing is. And the advantage for our team is that we get unfettered access to these historical societies and we can investigate at the drop of a dime, a phone call. Someone comes into town, it's like, hey, you wanna go investigate this place? Let's go. It's that simple. And in return, we lead walks for them and they profit. It's a win-win.
Yeah, it really is. That's a good deal to have. Kudos to you guys. You're doing well.
I find it much easier to do investigations like that as opposed to driving an hour and a half to a trailer park where the person is drunk or there's loaded weapons or you're the Saturday night entertainment or there's 30 people there to watch what you're doing. And that's one of the most frustrating things ever. We're in Metro Detroit. We've gone into houses where there are loaded AK-47s in a child's room.
Well, it is Detroit.
I know, but still, I don't do much in the way of residential investigations before because granted, you'll find good stuff on location, but you will also run into homeowners and business owners who aren't on the up and up. Mm-hmm. They will lie to get you there, doing drugs. A lot of times it winds up being a waste of time. There are people on our team who view it very differently, where they want to help homeowners and business owners first and foremost. And I applaud them for it. I've just done it long enough that I don't want to do it anymore. I do historical societies and I work with my ITC and that's enough for me.
That's it. Busy enough.
Yeah, pretty much. For example, this upcoming month, we did a walk last weekend. We have 5 more walks before Halloween, and we have 12 library presentations. So it doesn't leave much time for investigating, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool, though. You know, I mean, investigating is great, but there's just so many aspects of it when you're really interested in the paranormal and learning more and sharing it.
Yeah, for us, it's about getting the word out to the community, training the community, and teaching them important things like not to trespass, always get permission, how to, you know, don't be confrontational with the other side, how to be a respectful ghost hunter.
So, Tim, if somebody has a question or wants to contact you, they can go right to your website.
Oh, absolutely. ITCvoices.org. There's plenty of contact information there. You can just send an email to Tim@ITCvoices. I'm there. You can find me on Facebook. I've got an ITC Voices Facebook page and my personal account. I'm a pretty sociable guy. You can find me.
And what was the name of your ghost hunting group again?
Oh, they're the Motor City Ghost Hunters. And you can view that site at MotorCityGhostHunters.com.
Great. Thank you so much for talking with us tonight, Tim. Really appreciate
amazing.
It.
Amazing, especially that ghost box session.
It was a pleasure, guys.
Absolutely.
It's weird because doing this video thing, it's the first time I've done that on a radio interview. So it's kind of unique to see who I'm actually talking with.
Yeah,
we're the first. We're special.
Yeah. we have faces for radio.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Tim.
Thanks for listening to Dead Tribe Paranormal.
Thanks for listening to Dead Tribe Paranormal. After you're done, please listen to our other podcast, Rock Stories. In this series, we meet with music artists and bands that are out there keeping the scene alive. We capture and share their stories with you, the fans, and use their music as a soundtrack. Also look forward to new shows like Audibly Anonymous, the show where you, the listener, can anonymously share your deepest secrets. Please visit our website at echopodmedia.com and sign up for our email list on the homepage.
Hi, I'm Karen of Readings by Karen. Do you wonder where your life is headed? About work, family, relationships? Now is the time to contact a professional intuitive. I can give you the clarity you deserve to make the tough decisions in your life. Lower your anxieties and call today, 860-665-8024, or visit me on the web at readingsbykaren.com. Call today, 860-665-8024, or readingsbykaren.com. Readings by Karen, what's in your future?
'Cause the time.
Unapologetic is the word that best describes the premier spoken word to music album from Lori Adverb. Veering is 19 tracks of edgy poetry served on a platter of crazy rock and electronic music. You can listen to and purchase Veering by Lori Adverb at echopodmedia.com under the music tab.
Hello, world. You're listening to Echo Pod Media.